This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. How can you return to a place that was once home? That's a question at the root of a debut novel called Sugar Run. The story centers on Jody McCarty, who has been released from prison after spending more than half of her life incarcerated. She heads home to the Appalachian Mountains, and on her way back, she falls in love with a young mother. The two of them try to start a new life for themselves in West Virginia while Jody grapples with her past. Misha Marin is the author of Sugar Run. She's also Keenan visiting writer at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and joins us from partner station Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Welcome, Misha.
Thank you.
Talk about this idea of coming home. Was there a particular event in your life that triggered the notion, or had you always wanted to write about this?
I think that, when I started working on Sugar Run, I was living in Iowa City, Iowa. My partner was in graduate school there, and it was winter of 2013. It wasn't the first time that I'd left West Virginia, but somehow being out there in that snowy, desperately cold winter, I really felt further from West Virginia than I ever had before. And I started thinking about missing that place myself. And then I was also starting to work with this character, Jody McCarty. I didn't even really realize I was writing a novel at that point. But I started thinking about Jody, and Jody was missing West Virginia a lot, too. And so that kind of became the focus for me.
And your father did prison activism work, I understand. What kind of impact, if any, did that have on you?
Yeah, I think that had a huge impact on me that I didn't quite realize until later in life. So, yeah, my dad actually moved to Alderson, West Virginia to work with a nonprofit called the Hospitality House. It's sort of a pay-what-you-can bed and breakfast for family members of the women who are incarcerated at the federal prison camp in Alderson. So it's a really rural area, and there aren't many options for places for people to stay, and it's pretty hard to get to there. So they opened in 1979, I believe, this. It's a big old Victorian house that they have folks pay what they can afford to pay to stay there while they're visiting the women in prison. So my dad came there actually to help them out. There had been an escape from the prison, Sarah Jane Moore, who attempted to assassinate President Ford. She had escaped, and she'd come to the Hospitality House and asked for a ride to the bus station. The people working there didn't know who she was, gave her a ride, and she was caught before she even left the state, I think. But the people who were running the house were then brought in to be, you know, part of the trial, and they needed someone to help run the house while they were dealing with that. And so my dad heard about this through sort of activist circles and people he was hanging out with, and he thought, oh yeah, okay, I'll go help out for the summer. And while he was there, my mom was living across the street, and he ended up staying and raising a family in West Virginia. And when I was a young child, he volunteered to go into the prison and visit women who hadn't received a visit from family or friends in over a year. And I would often go with him. So as a very young child, I was experiencing that aspect of prison and overhearing conversations he was having with these women. So, yeah, I think it did impact me in many ways.
So you talked about the fact that Jody began to emerge as you were in Iowa City, and then sort of the confluence of these feelings you had about West Virginia. Was she always going to be an incarcerated or recently released? Was that also part of, was that initially part of her character and her story?
Yeah, you know, the way that that this novel kind of came to be for me, I think maybe this has a lot to do with the fact that it's my first novel and I was really teaching myself how to write with it. But when I first started thinking about Jody, the parts of her story that came to me first were there are sort of two narrative arcs in the book. One is right after she gets out of prison in 2007, and one is in 1988 and 89 before she goes into prison. And it was those earlier chapters that very first started to come to me, these images of Jody. And I knew something happened in her life that had kept her away from her mountain home for a long time. And the more that I started working with her, the more I realized, oh, this was a story of being imprisoned at a very young age. She goes into prison at 17, and then 18 years later is released.
Can you read for us maybe from the beginning of the book and set up a little bit of her story and her character?
Yes, absolutely. So I'll read a little bit here from the first few pages of the book. This is Jodi's release from prison. She's literally standing in the doorway, getting ready to leave prison for the first time in 18 years. The sergeant stepped away from the van. He signaled to Jodi, and she felt the distance reel out between them. He looked so small, nothing but a white hand beckoning. Jodi took one step and stopped. She could feel the treacherous edges stretched across that open door. 18 years. She tried to stop counting but could not. More of her life had been lived inside than out. "Go on," the redhead behind her said. Rain streamed down through the double bands of the van's headlights, hitting the parking lot and mixing into the hiss and fog, and above the razor wire, barely visible, the soft swells of green mountains rose. "Go!" A hand slapped her shoulder, and Jodi broke free. She ran, soaked wet, in 2 seconds flat. She ran, and all she saw were those mountains. 18 years at Jackson, and she never knew she was living in the mountains. From the exercise yard, she had only seen what was straight above, a sometimes gray, sometimes blue, rectangular lid of sky. Mountains were a dream that had ended when the judge said life in prison. Mountains were far off, West Virginia, home.
Misha Marin reading from her debut novel, Sugar Run. She's going to be at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville tonight. You can also catch her on Thursday, January 10th at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro, and then Friday the 11th at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill. So the idea of a woman being released from prison, I mean, I almost think 10 years ago or 20 years ago is something we would find fairly strange and exotic. But these days, sadly enough, it is a story that is too often told. Is this something that, how did this strike you as a theme or as a plot? Was it something that struck you as exotic at the moment? Like, I'm going to have to really give the backstory to this, or sadly too mainstream these days?
Maybe somewhere in the middle. I mean, I think for me specifically, growing up in a very small town, less than 1,000 people in West Virginia, where one of the main industries in the town, quite honestly, is the prison. There's a federal prison, you know, that's been there, I think since the 1930s or 40s. And the fact that my father had moved there for that reason, and that he was involved, and my mother was also involved in some ways when I was younger, it was not exotic to me per se,
right.
But not exactly, mainstream either. But I think it was a story that I was somewhat familiar with, and one that I wanted to explore in a real way. And I particularly wanted to explore post-prison life. I think I had read an article about people who were released from prison, and this article is particularly about people who have been in prison for a very long time and released when they are later in their lives, and just how hard that transition is hard for anyone, but particularly hard for folks who've been in for a very long time. And so I think I wanted to explore what does it mean to get out? Of course, it's a moment of great joy, but it's also brings with it many, many hardships.
And particularly difficult in a place like West Virginia, where jobs are hard to come by and where your record is going to play an important part in whether or not you can sustain yourself. Talk about that. The landscape of West Virginia certainly plays an important part, the kind of place where you want to go home, you want to return to. But the politics of West Virginia also have to play a part. When she's going to a particular state, with some particular majority views or perhaps predominant views, and she's going to fall in love with a woman. So talk about the politics of West Virginia and whether or not that played a conscious role in your making this book.
Yeah. So West Virginia is a place that I think many people dream about returning to, people who've left. It's a very beautiful state with a really wonderful communities of people, but it's not an easy place to live in, and not an easy place to return to for many reasons. Some of that being that jobs in general are pretty hard to come by. Good, steady jobs in West Virginia are hard to come by, especially for someone like Jodi, who has a record. Part of her probation is that she has to be employed, but she finds that very, very difficult. Even places like Walmart and McDonald's, with the type of felony that she has, won't employ her So her options are extremely limited, and she turns to some non-traditional and perhaps not so great ways of making money herself. So that's one difficulty. And then, yeah, she's also returning with a woman, Miranda, who she's in a relationship with, and she is not entirely out to her family. I mean, I think Jodi is someone who, throughout her life, she's been in relationships with different women, and that's definitely a very important part of her life, but she doesn't necessarily see herself as like a lesbian woman. She doesn't take on that mantle of the kind of political side of it. But regardless of what she wants to take on or not take on, you know, there are people around her who see this relationship that she's having and judge it. You know, there's a part in the book when her brother kind of uses it as a threat. Her girlfriend Miranda has three young sons, and her brother basically says, you know, do this thing that I want you to do to help me with my drug business, or you know, I could tell the authorities that these kids are being raised in a less than Christian environment. And I think that that's something that's quite real, that, you know, for queer people living in West Virginia, there is a lot that we come up against. There's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of ways in which I think small, close-knit communities can be both a benefit and a hindrance, right? So in small communities, people might sometimes be willing to overlook things that they judge because they know you, right? So I've had a coworker say to me, you know, I think gay sex is a sin, but I love my son and he's a gay man, right? So in small communities, I think there's ways in which people can see folks as a person first, and then the category that they might want to fit them in secondarily. And that's a wonderful kind of thing that sometimes people in small communities are willing to see each other in that way. But also, there is a lot of hypocrisy and a lot of judgment. And in a small community, it's much harder to stay under the radar with those things. So yeah, I think Jodi, you know, she isn't very vocal about her relationship, what type of relationship she has with Miranda, particularly to her family, because I think she knows just how hard those conversations can be.
I wonder if I can ask you to read another section of the book.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to read a section here that falls in the 1988 section, and it's actually just after Jodi has met Paula, who becomes her first girlfriend. The bar is called Blue Mine, a long, narrow shack, the only business open in a one-road river town. The place is full of sleepy mid-afternoon heat, but Paula's energy fractures the lull. She is laughing now, telling a story about a dog that eats paper money. Jodi watches her, absorbing every gesture and inflection, grateful for how Paula's presence shakes off the gravity that settled on her over the past few years. The weight of her future. She has not pushed herself to excel in school, and she is not beautiful, and the pieces of her life are very plain to see. But Paula seems to her to be weightless, free of all normal responsibilities and constantly on the verge of something dangerous and great. There is a velocity to her that pulls you close. Her life lived like the coil before the strike. "You're so damn cute," Paula reaches out to touch Jodi's chin. Jodi tucks her head. Being wanted by Paula is completely different than being wanted by Jimmy. This is something rare and magnificent. She is afraid it is a mistake somehow and will soon be taken away.
Misha Marin reading from her new novel, Sugar Run. She's also Keenan visiting writer at UNC Chapel Hill, and she's going to be at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville tonight. You can also catch her at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro and Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill later in the month. We've got all that at our website, stateofthings.org. This is, I think, a wonderful book in the sense that that it is so personal. It's a personal story, and the political cannot be extracted from it. So any suggestion that the personal is not political, is clearly not the case when you read a book like this. Is that something that for you had to sort of discipline yourself to keep this about these personal relationships and let the politics kind of work their way or be the context, or did it just flow naturally as these characters emerged?
Pretty much it flowed naturally, you know. This book came to me very much first as a character. It came to me through Jodi, right? So I'm not particularly sure exactly, you know, where she came from. There's not a model of like someone or a particular story I heard or something that I can point to, but she kind of appeared to me. I started writing little vignettes in my journal, little scenes, and she was a very strong character. Her voice was very strong. Her story was very strong. And then everything else kind of flowed out of that. The plot flowed out of that. And then, so I was very aware from the beginning of it being a personal story, and also pretty aware that Jodi was the kind of person who, you know, even though the most important romantic relationships in her life are with women, that she would be someone who, you know, might not even say that she was a lesbian, definitely wouldn't, you know, I consider myself a queer woman. That's how I describe myself, but that's not something that Jodi would say. And it was pretty clear to me as I worked with her on the page that this is not a the politics are very woven in, but it's not a political story. It's not a social novel that's like, you know, trying to have a thesis about queer life in Appalachia or about post-prison life. It's a story of a particular woman, and those are the facts of her life.
Misha Marin is the author of Sugar Run. She's also Keenan visiting writer at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And she joined us from Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Thank you, Misha.
Thank you.
Going to be at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville tonight, Scuppernong Books in Greensboro Thursday, and then Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on Friday. And we've got that at our website, stateofthings.org. Seen any good or bad movies last year? It's time to tell us what you think about the best and the worst of 2018. That's going to be on our next Movies on the Radio, and you can tell us what you think. A movie you loved or a movie you hated in 2018. Send your pick to SOT@WUNC.org or tweet at us at #SOTMovie. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.